You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McQuown and a foreword by Stephen Covey. Last show, we were looking at the different types of multipliers. The next type of multiplier we're looking at is called the Challenger. By 1995, the Oracle Corporation was headquartered in the affluent waterfront neighborhood of Redwood Shores on the San Francisco Peninsula in California. Oracle had begun retooling its products for the internet, but the business strategy was still unclear. The challenge of figuring it out would fall on a certain Ray Lane, Oracle's president, who had joined Oracle 2 years earlier and had grown the U.S. business from $571 million to $1.2 billion. Ray's revolution. Ray decided to gather the top 250 leaders of the company from around the globe in a series of forums to educate them on the corporate strategy and to align the leadership team behind this strategy. Ray and the other senior executives, including CEO Larry Ellison and CFO Jeff Henley, prepared their strategy presentations and gathered the first group of 30 executives. They gave their presentations and held discussions, but as the week went on, the group became more and more confused. One VP spoke for the group when he said, quote, "We aren't clear on the strategy. We just saw a lot of PowerPoint slides," unquote. Ray and his team went back to the drawing board and did a major overhaul of their presentations. They invited another group of 30 executives. This time, the feedback was different. It was an all-out revolt. One of the executives took a risk and said, quote, "Stop getting people together until there is a clear strategy," unquote. The team was not buying what Ray and the rest of the team were selling. Independence Day. The senior executive team quickly regrouped at Ray's house on their first available day of the 4th of July. They realized the global business had become more complex and diverse than they originally thought, and they couldn't build the strategy alone at corporate headquarters. They decided to take a fundamentally different approach. Ray and the executive team started out trying to tell others all the answers. They switched to sharing the fundamental questions, trends, and assumptions that were reshaping their views. When they came back together with the next forum of leaders, Ray and the other executives shared what they saw happening in the business and where they saw the world going. Ray seeded the opportunities and these trends would represent for Oracle and presented a framework for a strategy. Four key transformations needed in the business. And then with this broad stroke of his brush, he stopped telling and started asking, quote, "Are these the transformations needed in the business?" unquote. And, quote, which of our assumptions about the future might be wrong, unquote. Ray gave the group a challenge to fill in the blanks. The team would have 2 days to examine each of the four transformations, identify milestones, and pinpoint the implications for the business, and then pass their thinking on to the next group of leaders who would go further. The group did exactly that, advancing the thinking of the executive team and then handing off their work to the next group of executives. The group reveled in their collective success and left the forum knowing they had begun something very big. The process continued until all SVPs and VPs had been involved. Each group challenged the work that had been done before them. They took their tasks seriously, turning the strategy upside down and sideways as they looked for holes, logical flaws, and vulnerabilities. In the end, they emerged with both a validation and a refinement of the collective thinking. The momentum was building. The convention. Ray and the other executives culminated this process by convening the entire leadership team of the company. The executive team unveiled the strategic intent of the organization and the transformations needed in the business. The reaction of the global leadership team was overwhelming enthusiasm and optimism, knowing they would be making business history. The strategy was fresh and compelling, yet it was familiar to them because they had co-created it and they could see their fingerprints all over it. When the meeting was divided into regional breakouts, the scene was far from typical. Instead of a discussion about why this won't work in Europe, why this won't work in the Middle East, or why this might not work in Africa, the conversation in the breakout room was almost boisterous with questions like, what is the first step? Where can we start implementing this in Germany? The scene in the Japanese breakout room said it all. They discussed the strategy and its implications for Japan. And then with quiet fervor, they began to organize as if they were going into battle. What was unveiled in the meeting and the breakout sessions was a manifestation and statement of the collective will of the organization. Under Ray Lane and Larry Ellison's leadership, the organization forged ahead to execute this strategic intent, propelling Oracle into the lead position in the late 1990s for enterprise computing in the internet world. As a result, from 1996 to the year 2000, Oracle grew from $4.2 billion to $10.1 billion, more than doubling revenues. Ray Lane began with an honest attempt to sell a strategy to the organization, but he emerged a more powerful leader as he first seeded the opportunity and then laid down a stretch challenge for the organization. He didn't set the direction. He ensured the direction was set. He operated as a challenger. The three practices of the challenger. How does the challenger engage the full brain power of the organization? Among the multipliers we studied in our research, we found three common practices. Multipliers: 1, seed the opportunity; 2, lay down a challenge; 3, generate belief. We'll examine each in turn. Number 1, seed the opportunity. Multipliers understand that people grow through challenges. They understand that intelligence grows by being stretched and tested. So even if the leader has a clear vision of the direction the organization wants to go, he or she doesn't just give it to people. Multipliers do not give answers. They provide just enough information to provoke thinking and to help people discover and see the opportunity for themselves. They begin the process of mental discovery. We'll outline a few of the ways that multipliers seed opportunity and begin the discovery process. First, show the need. One of the best ways to seed an opportunity is to allow someone else to discover it for him or herself. When people can see the need for themselves, they develop a deep understanding of the issues, and quite often, all the leader needs to do is get out of the way and let them solve the problem. The Benyon Center on the University of Utah campus was established to encourage students to engage in community service projects and activism while they were in college. Irene Fisher, the center's director for 14 years, was hopeful that the students would sign up for some of the city's toughest problems. Instead of making a speech or just selling her vision of service to the poorest members of the community, Irene invited students to take a leadership position and organize other students to work with the community. She took them downtown into the inner city community so they could see for themselves the needs that existed. They walked the streets and observed the plight of the homeless. They visited homeless shelters. They talked with single mothers struggling to get by. Because they saw the needs for themselves, they became passionate and curious about how to create change and learned rapidly in the process. As their involvement level grew, these student leaders assumed more and more challenging roles. She noted, "University students are pretty smart. Once they see something, they start asking questions. Our students ask a lot of questions and then went to work. Irene seeded the opportunity and allowed students to take the challenge." Irene added, "I don't see myself as a challenger per se. I think I've created the opportunity for people and see the challenge so they can respond to it." The Benyon Center is still thriving today. Built on the assumption that you don't get the most out of people if you tell them what to do. You get the full effort if you help people discover opportunity and then challenge themselves. Challenge the assumptions. Multipliers ask the questions that challenge the fundamental assumptions in an organization and disrupt the prevailing logic. Renowned management guru and strategy professor C.K. Prahalad is known for asking the questions that challenge the fundamental assumptions of an organization. He understands the strategy is about understanding and questioning assumptions. When working with management teams in leading corporations, CK had a penchant for asking the unsettling questions that rattle their assumptions, enable them to see market opportunities and threats in a different light. In working with the Philips Corporation, a multinational manufacturing company, and after carefully interviewing each member of the executive team to uncover their core assumptions about business and the tensions in the organization, he could see that they had assumed invincibility in the market. CK formulated a plan. When he arrived at their executive strategy off-site, he began a fictitious article he'd written that might appear in the New York Times, speculating a bankruptcy at Philips. He then launched the following questions. What changes in the current competitive landscape would devastate Philips's revenue stream? What if companies A and B merged? What company changes could possibly lead to a bankruptcy? What is your game plan if it happens? The room became tensely silent. He had shaken their beliefs upon which the current business strategy was based. With the full interest of the executive team, he guided the discussion as they began to explore the answers. Reframing problems. Multipliers understand the power of an opportunity. As Peter Block, consulting guru and author, observed, the most powerful work is done in response to an opportunity, not in response to a problem. Multipliers analyze problems, but they also reframe them to show the opportunity presented by a challenge. Consider how Alan G. Laffray, when he was CEO of Procter & Gamble, reframed the problems of generating revenue growth from a new product R&D as part of his overall revitalization of the company. As Larry Huston and Nabil Sakab explained in their Harvard Business Review article, Connect and Develop, the invent-it-themselves model was no longer allowing P&G to sustain a high level of top-line growth. At $25 billion, the company could still manage to do it, But beyond $50 billion, it was impossible, and PG lost half their market cap as their stock fell from $118 to $52 a share. Rather than falling into the trap of doing more of the same, Lafray developed a new strategy of sourcing their innovation from the outside. The shift was from not invented here to proudly invented elsewhere. Rather than thinking of innovation as invention, where the R&D has been done in their own physical labs, Lafray looked for ways to join forces with people in their supply chain whom they can partner with to innovate more rapidly. For example, Houston and Sacabrelate, where the idea emerged to produce Pringles potato chips with pictures and words printed on the crisps themselves. Procter & Gamble had to decide whether to create an end-to-end solution from scratch or whether to find an innovative solution from somewhere within their partner network. In the past, bringing a new product to market represented a 2-year investment. But with Lafray's new reframe, they could for the first time see a smarter path. In the case of the Pringles, they created a technology belief that defined the problems they needed to solve, and they circulated it throughout their global networks of individuals and institutions to discover if anyone in the world had a ready-made solution. It was through their European network that they discovered a small bakery in Bologna, Italy, run by a university professor who had also manufactured baking equipment. The professor's innovation allowed P&G to get to the market in half the time at a fraction of the cost of inventing the solutions in-house. The product was an immediate hit. It led the Pringles division to enjoy double-digit growth for the next 2 years.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman. We're on the section of looking at different types of multipliers within an organization, and we're looking in detail at the challenger. Create a starting point. Multipliers provide a starting point, but not a complete solution. By offering a starting point, they generate more questions and answers. These questions then encourage their team to fully define the opportunity while giving them confidence that they are building on a solid foundation. Ray Lane and Oracle's top executives created a skeleton of a strategic framework and then asked groups of senior leaders to systematically and collectively work to complete the whole strategy. When a challenger had successfully seeded the opportunity, other people could see the opportunity for themselves. And because the opportunity has been planted but not fully grown, others are taken through the process of discovery. This process of exploration and discovery sparks intellectual curiosity and begins to generate energy for the challenge. And because the answers are clearly not formed, people know there's still something for me to do and they can step in to be more involved. laying down a challenge. Once an opportunity is seeded and intellectual energy is created, multipliers establish the challenge at hand in such a way that it creates a huge stretch for an organization, while diminishers create huge gaps between what they know and what other people know. Multipliers create a vacuum that draws people into the challenge. They establish a compelling challenge that creates tension. People see the tension and the size of the stretch, and they are intrigued, and perhaps sometimes even puzzled. Mission Impossible. Matt McCauley took the reins of Gymboree, a $790 million children's retailer headquartered in San Francisco, at the age of 33, after coming through the ranks of planning and inventory management. This made Matt not only the youngest CEO to head Gymboree in its 33-year history, but the youngest CEO of a company in Wall Street's Russell 2000 Index. McCauley used his youth to keep him open to the ideas of others. "I love to riff and bounce ideas off other people, regardless of what their function is. Gymboree employees are all talented, bright people." Matt has been a pole vaulter in college. He set one bar at 17 feet 6 inches, which is what he could clear, but he always kept a second bar set at 20 feet, the world record at the time, to remind himself of what was possible. Matt took the same approach at work. Raising the bar. When Matt took over as president, he had the benefit of a recently rejuvenated product line, but the challenge of some sloppy business operations. He saw an opportunity not only to grow sales, but to vastly increase the net income per share, which was then at 69 cents per share. Using his deep knowledge of operations and inventory optimization, he estimated the upside opportunity and then went to the board and told them he believed the company could achieve $1 per share. The board members laughed, but Matt remained convinced of the opportunity. As Matt met with his management team, he explained his rationale for the growth opportunity in both sales and earnings per share. He took them through the calculations and sales expense optimization that he'd been studying for the last 5 years and asked if they could indeed be achieved. He then threw out Mission Impossible, a net income of $1. He asked each member of his management team this question: "What would be your Mission Impossible?" As the management team caught the enthusiasm of this high bar approach, he began to ask the entire organization to do the same. Soon, every person inside his 9,500-person organization had a Mission Impossible goal, a crazy aspiration. It appeared that being asked to identify their personal Mission Impossible ignited the change to make it possible. Clearing the bar. A year later, Matt announced to the board, to Wall Street, and to every employee in Gymboree that they achieved not only just the Mission Impossible goal of $1 per share, but more than that, $1.19 per share, which represented a 72% improvement over the previous fiscal year. Fueled by this accomplishment, what did Matt do next? He set the bar higher and suggested to the board he could achieve $2 per share. This time the board thought it was outrageous, but he turned to his organization for support, sharing his Mission Impossible task, and once again asking every person to create their personal Mission Impossible needed to achieve $2 per share. In fiscal year 2007, they delivered $2.15 per share, an 80% improvement. Again, Matt went to the board to suggest $3 per share. 1 year later, he announced $2.67 per share, and 2 years later, in 2008, an incredible $3.21 per share. That is a more than 50% increase in earnings per share year over year over year, and an almost five-fold increase in 4 years. This young challenger CEO used his deep knowledge of the business to see both an opportunity and a path for achieving unheard-of levels of business performance. He articulated this opportunity and laid down the challenge for the organization. He then asks each person to join him in attempting the impossible to analyze how they might achieve it. By setting the bar high, he gave people permission to rethink the business. By asking them to create their personal mission impossible, he allowed them to embrace and step into the challenge themselves. And by acknowledging the impossible nature of their mission, he gave people permission to try without fear of failure. How does a multiplier achieve this level of stretch without breaking an organization? How do you create intrigue rather than apprehension? In our research, we found that multipliers achieve this energizing stretch in three possible ways. First, they extend a clear and concrete challenge. Then they ask hard questions that need to be answered to achieve the challenge. But most important, they don't answer them. They let others fill in the blanks. Extending the concrete challenge. Sean Mendley works as a director in an after-school program in East Palo Alto, California, a city that in 1992 had the highest per capita murder rate in the United States, and a city where dropping out of high school was the norm. Sean himself faced many challenges growing up, but went on to attend and graduate from Cornell University. After graduation, Sean decided to spend a year at the Boys and Girls Club of the Peninsula. 4 years later, he can't bring himself to leave. Even now, after being accepted into a graduate program at Stanford, you can find him doing homework at the club beside the youth half his age. With a journey like Sean's, he has ample reason to tell the teens he works with that they need what they need to do to succeed. But instead of telling, he challenges. When Sean first met Tiana Robinson, or Taji, she was a shy and hesitant 12-year-old. When she reluctantly shook his outstretched hand, he stopped her with a big smile and said, "You know where there are three things you might want to do when you meet someone. First, look them in the eye. Second, give them a firm handshake. Third, shake their hand up and down three times." Taji was appalled but intrigued. Sean continued to extend small, specific challenges to her. She asked Taji if she would take a newspaper class. She did. Then he encouraged her to write a main article for the school paper, meet regularly with a writing tutor, and learn how to write a great essay. Again, she did. Next, he encouraged her to raise the bar and compete in her school's Scholar of the Year competition. She won. Sean extends these challenges by asking the youth hard questions and then giving them space to think and respond. As Taji put it, "He taught me to think for myself." This allows youth like Taji to strengthen their intellectual muscles and build the confidence they need to tackle the hardest challenges. We're going to be looking at more detailed analysis of how multipliers operate within organizations. We're going to look at some more of how the challenger operates. And we're going to look at other types of multipliers. For example, the debate maker and how investors operate and produce multipliers in organizations and so on. So please stay tuned for further interesting presentations.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You're listening.